And this is a great follow-up to Charles's talk, or perhaps a different way of saying it is that Charles's talk was a great lead-in for this. Why don't we put it that way? So I think by now, everybody here must be getting the general idea that there's a lot of satellite data out there. They are a rich source of input data, a rich source of input into numerical weather prediction models that have middle atmospheres. And there's, you know, intuitively, you sort of think that that would be, you know, a great next step. And I'm going to focus on two missions today. One of them is the AURA, the EOS AURA mission, the AURA platform on the EOS A-train. And I'm also going to talk about the TIMED mission. TIMED has been up since December 2001. And AURA launched in July 2004. Both of these satellites, vehicles, have temperature measuring devices, the SABR instrument on TIMED and the MLS, microwave limb sounder, on AURA. And they both, they overlap in the stratosphere and lower mesosphere, or, you know, up to the mesopause, I guess. And so it would appear, at least theoretically, that the temperatures from these data sets could, you know, potentially define or at least you know, initialize an operational middle atmosphere. However, as Charles spent a lot of time on with us on this issue with us, you can't possibly underscore. I underestimate the importance of dealing with this local time sampling issue, because middle atmosphere satellites historically undersample the atmosphere in local time. I've got some slides of my own, but Charles showed us how on an individual day you pick up, you know, on a good day you'll pick up two distinct local times if you have a, you know, a daytime and a nighttime, you know, an instrument with daytime and nighttime measurement capabilities. So you, so the important thing to keep in mind here is that you can't just dump data, dump middle atmosphere data into a model without considering the effects of local time sampling. Why is that important? Why is there a big problem with undersampling? The answer, as Charles pointed out, is because in the middle atmosphere, the tides, the diurnal and higher up semi-diurnal tides, are among the dominant dynamical features. And if you do not properly sample them, then you mix up the signatures of tides and of slowly varying features. You mix up tidal signals with just about everything else. Now, Charles has shown us sampling patterns of so-called precessing satellites, satellites that sweep out a different local time every day, and over the course of, it depends on the satellite, 36 days for UR's day and night viewing instruments, 72 days for timed. Over some interval, a precessing satellite will generally start buying you a sufficient collection of local times that you can start compositing, you know, things like tides. But then the problem you run into, as Charles also introduced us to, is that the motion that you're trying to define is itself changing during that collection period. And so in the business of middle atmosphere data analysis, especially tidal analysis, you're constantly playing off. You're playing off and trying to optimize the problem of collecting a long enough sampling interval, but not so long that the motion is changing underneath your feet, or I guess above our heads. So this is where my talk kind of comes in here. The question that we want to answer, well, this is where I got the idea of seeing whether by collecting data from two satellites with different local time crossings, whether you can somehow, I mean, whether that optimizes the dilemma we're facing here. I mean, intuitively, it seems like it should, I guess. The question that I wanted to, examine, therefore, is it feasible to combine data from the SABR instrument on times and the MLS instrument on EOS, the temperatures, as it turns out? You know, is it feasible to combine the two, and how much better scientific yield is this going to buy us? So, for starters, I just want to show a few sampling tracks here. The, on February the 5th, 2005, the red tracks here are SABR's sub-satellite, sub-orbital tracks. There's 15 orbits a day, and so you're sweeping out 30 red tracks from the ascending and the descending portion of the orbit. And on the same day, we had sampling from Aura, also roughly 14 or 15 orbits per day, daytime and nighttime. So you might get the impression by looking at this figure that you could maybe, depending on the spacing and stuff, you might get the idea that you could pick up about 60 points along, 60 longitude points along a particular latitude track, 60 samples, maybe 30 waves. But if you plot now the local time versus the latitude, rather than longitude versus latitude, you can see that the measurements all line up very, very neatly in individual local times. And as I said earlier, a typical middle atmosphere satellite will sweep out two local times a day on the ascending and descending portion of the orbit. So right away you can see that by grabbing two satellites, you're doubling the daily local time coverage from 2 hours to four. That's, you know, that's a boon. So that it kind of tempers the perceived advantage of it will, however, temper the how can I put this? The resolution that you can pick up in longitude, because the only way, I mean, to put it most simply, the only way that you'd be able to pick up 30 waves along a latitude circle from this plot is if they were quasi-stationary. And, I mean, for wave number one, that's fine, but I'm not sure that there exist wave numbers higher than three, for that matter, that, that aren't varying pretty quickly in time, at least in the mesosphere. So that is the local time coverage on an individual day. And as you sweep through a so-called yaw period, which is, this isn't the geometric definition, but from the point of view of a middle atmosphere data analyst, a yaw period is the amount of time it takes for the satellite to sweep out as many local times as it's going to. And this is local time coverage picked up over 60 days. EOS is sun synchronous. That means that it sees the exact same local times every single day, whereas SABR on the time vehicle is processing, and over a 60-day period, it sweeps out nearly 24 hours. So let me just quickly mention what's being measured here. SABR measures temperatures and a bunch of other chemical constituents. I can't remember them all. And the temperatures are inferred from the CO2 15 micron emissions. And they've got some pretty sophisticated inversion algorithms developed at Langley by Chris Mertens and his colleagues. They account for non-local thermodynamic equilibrium physics. And in the region of that we're considering, which is between 20 and about 85, kilometers, SABR's vertical resolution is 2 kilometers. MLS deduces temperature from a very different emission, from the 118 gigahertz O2 band and the 190 gigahertz emission. And the performance of this retrieval varies depending on where you are, but you can see that if you get into the lower mesosphere, the vertical resolution kind of starts going kind of starts going on you, and only the deepest and longest wavelength motions are going to be discernible. Well, here I've collected 1 year of EOS. I've collected data throughout the entire year of 2005. From Sabre and MLS. This is every single temperature at every single latitude and altitude for the entire year. And just basically threw them up. And, things look pretty good until you start getting up into the mesosphere where the temperatures tend to be colder.
How I...
Well, I guess I should have mentioned that I sought out temporal and geographic coincidences. The measurements are matched. Thanks for reminding me. The measurements are matched, I think, to within maybe they're matched to within 2 degrees in latitude and 5 or 10 degrees in longitude, and an hour, I think, in time. So. Yeah, that's true. If it wouldn't have been matched, then you probably couldn't have seen the plot. I mean, it would have been all been black. But anyway, so geographically and temporally coincident profiles match up pretty well up to, in the stratosphere. And as you get down to the up into the mesosphere, I've got another plot showing the altitude stuff. Then things start diverging. There's far more scatter, and there is a cold bias in the MLS data, and this plot just simply shows that effect, but broken out by altitude. The here we're dealing here with the same set of coincidence profiles. So here I just took the difference between the two. And you can, the collective, average difference, and you can see that there's a slight warm bias. MLS is a slight warm bias in the stratosphere, and above 10 scale heights, it really is significantly colder. My co-author, Dennis Riggin, put together an empirical correction function for MLS. I don't really know quite how he did it. As I said, it was empirical, but he fit it to a couple of parameters. One of them I know is solar zenith angle. Can't remember what the other was. Viewing angle or solar zenith angle. And put together an empirical correction. And when you do that, you wind up with the solid line. And so this correction wipes out a good deal of the bias. But correction or no correction, the RMS difference between MLS and Sabre starts going up at 10 and from 12 scale heights and above, it really takes off. Exactly why this happens, the two data sets scatter about each other this way above those altitudes has not really been systematically examined. Presumably, it's due to the fact that Sabre has much more sensitivity. Scale heights. Scale heights. Yeah, its scale height is physical is goes like physical geometric altitude over over scale height, or another way to think of it is log pressure. So presumably, the scatter between them probably has something to do with the fact that Sabre is much more sensitive, a much more sensitive instrument at these altitudes, and there's just more noise. There's a lot more variability up at mesospheric altitudes. Much of it small scale. Be all this as it may, we go ahead and combine the two data sets and see what we can get. And I start with the tides because the analysis of tides is one of the easiest ways to kind of see what influence there can be in merging the two data sets. So in my case, the way I fit tides is I create a daily ascending descending node difference in the satellite data So that's like a 12-hour difference for MLS and a 9-hour, roughly a 9-hour difference for Sabre. And I do that in order to just avoid aliasing or leakage you get by, you know, grabbing a lot of local times that might be sampled over a long period of time. So here's an example of what a 12-hour difference looks like. I show this to demonstrate two things. One, that a 12-hour difference is kind of an old trick for getting it's kind of a fast track to getting a sense of what the diurnal tide is doing. You can't really completely define, you can't define both amplitude and phase from that, but you can, you know, kind of get a sense of how it's behaving. And so, you know, this is just to convince you that 12-hour differences are tidal proxies. And the other thing is that you also get a sense for how much the tide is changing. In this case, I've mapped I've mapped about 60 days here, which is my sampling period. And as Charles pointed out, there's a fairly well-known and somewhat understood semi-annual variation in tidal amplitude. And as you at the amplitude at equinox is almost twice as much as at solstice. And as you go up into the as you start getting higher up, the temporal variability seems to increase. For example, here we're at a 2-degree contour, and at the beginning of February, and 3 weeks later, you know, the amplitude, I guess, is how I would kind of think of this. The amplitude has shot. The phase seems somewhat stable. The amplitude is increased by, you know, a factor of at least two. So, you know, the point is that, you know, tides can and do change quickly, and so you don't want to you want to get enough sampling, but not so much that you're watering it down too much. So this is simply an example. You know, it's one of these one of these plots to prove that I actually did the analysis here. This is simply an example of fitting a 24-hour harmonic to a bunch of 12-hour differences. So and much of the scatter that you're seeing in the data points around this fitted curve, you know, has to do with the variability of the tide over this long period. So here's what happens. I'll try to keep this straightforward. Each column here represents a different sampling interval length. This column here on the far left is 60 days of sampling. This is 45, and this column is 30 days of sampling. And the top row is the amplitude of the diurnal tide fit only to Sabre data during those sampling intervals. The central panels are fitting to both EOS and Sabre data dumped together. And this bottom panel is the difference I've only plotted the amplitude here. This bottom panel is the difference you get in, you know, the difference in the answer, so to speak. And what the bottom panel shows is as follows. It shows that over a 60-day period, throwing together Sabre and EOS, adding EOS to the mix doesn't seem to buy you a whole lot, as if you would not have added it. And, you know, that kind of makes sense because, you know, Sabre is viewing pretty much the exact same thing that EOS is seeing. And so over a 60-day period, it's just plain redundant to throw in EOS data. However, as the sampling interval shrinks, the effect of adding in this extra data set, you know, increases. And, you know, this is one of these plots, these results that, as one of our speakers this morning said, to paraphrase him, this is one of these plots that, you know, you're kind of happy to get because it kind of confirms what would seem to be obvious. And that is that over a smaller data gathering period, having data from two different satellites with vastly differing local times, having that extra satellite makes a bigger difference.
Yes.
That is. Well, the target, you're right. It's a moving target. It's a moving target, and this is something I'm kind of going to be getting to. This is not something I have figured out the best way in the world to measure. But yeah, another issue you're dealing with is that as the sampling time goes down, then the answer is different because you're not watering it down over a 60-day period. You're picking it up. I don't know if I did it from the beginning to 30 days in or 30 days in to 30 days at the end. I keep changing that. But as you can see, toward the end of the period, the tide is getting stronger. Everything I'm showing using that has been adjusted for that bias. Yeah. That's right. So I'm glad you raised this point because this slide kind of summarizes what I was saying is that the tidal amplitudes vary in time, so you know the shorter the interval, then the shorter the interval, the less temporal smearing you're doing, and the greater the influence of having that second satellite is apt to be. And, you know, all that is well and good, but it does also kind of raise the question of, you know, how good. I mean, how correct are these determinations anyway? I mean, we've shown the effects of having twice as much data, but are we really correctly retrieving the tide, you know, even with all this data? So in order to try to get a feeling for this, I went and grabbed a virtual data set. This is from WACM, the NCARS Whole Atmosphere Community Climate Model. And this column, the left side, shows results with SABR sampling only. The right column is with both the satellites. And here, okay, yeah, all right, I guess I've got a 60-day sampling period here. Now, here's what's going on. The top panel shows the retrieval of the diurnal tide when the only thing that the atmosphere that the two satellites that SABR or SABR and EOS are sampling, this is what they retrieve, and the only thing in the atmosphere is the diurnal tide. Okay, it sounds a bit artificial, I know, but I think I've got the diurnal period here plus about four side lobes on each side, and the resolution is 1/30 days. So I'm trying to capture here, you know, the signal kind of centered at the diurnal period. Now the second panel is when these satellites are sampling the entire WACM atmosphere. Everything that was going on in WACM over 60 days, except here you notice I wrote 30 day. I used a 30 day WACM sample and I simply repeated it. And the reason I did that rather than using a 60 day WACM sample is because this particular 30 day period sample that I just repeated out had a lot of variability in it. So I wanted to see just how bad things could get. So this is what you retrieve. This is what the sampling from these satellites would give you if the atmosphere consisted of nothing but a diurnal tide and some side lobes. This is what you get if you're retrieving the tide from the atmosphere with everything in it, everything that is with variability between 3 hours and 30 days. And this at the bottom is the difference between these two retrievals, and it's what I think of as being I think of this as being mostly non-diurnal stuff. So in other words, you can retrieve a diurnal amplitude, but it could be from stuff that's not diurnal, okay? Stuff that kind of aliasing, I guess you could think of it. And if you squint, then I'm pleased to be able to say that when you use two satellites, you get less contamination. Whether that's sufficiently less is something we can talk about at some later time. And this is simply, I want to wrap up here, you know, this is simply the same concept except plotted a different way. Let me see if I have enough time to go through this. What these curves are showing is a measure of this non-diurnal stuff. I call it an error. It's a measure of the non-diurnal stuff that gets retrieved. And the thing to note here is that for a 60-day interval, there does not seem to be a big difference between whether you try to retrieve tides using two satellites or one. But as you start moving down to shorter sampling intervals, then the ratio, the stuff ratio, the junk, you know, the leakage, the junk goes up in general, and it's reduced by using both satellites together. And so that's another way of, you know, measuring really whether having two satellites is better than one. Another way of measuring the obvious, you might think of. And do I, one last question I want to answer. The longer sampling, with this longer sampling interval, you get less influence of merging the data from the two satellites, but the other bonus you get is that in this case, this is all the migrating tide, by the way, you also kind of keep the lid down on, you know, on the junk you pick up in the retrieval. As I said, if you move to shorter intervals, the influence of having two satellites increases, but then in this case, so does the error. So does having a longer sampling interval, is that always good? No, it's not always good. It doesn't always lead to less error. And here I'm looking at a different tide, it's still got a diurnal period, but this one has a zonal wave number 3. In this case, the error goes down when we have a shorter sampling period. And the reason is because for this particular tidal mode, there was a lot of variability over the 60-day, over this 60-day period, which is a repeated 30-day period. This particular mode was very strong for 10 days, and then at roughly about 10 days, it has an abrupt change, not only in amplitude, that's all I plotted here, also in phase, which I didn't show you, but the phase-like changes by at least 90, by about 120 degrees here. So sometimes, you know, so sometimes it is advantageous to keep it short if you can. So anyway, I'm going to summarize here and say that I'm ready to believe that satellite data can be extremely useful for initializing, evolving, and constraining, you know, model mesospheres and lower thermospheres, because this part of the atmosphere contains stuff, motions, phenomena that are strong, that are dissipating, that are wave-driven, gravity wave-driven, as Charles told us, and that are generated in situ, like instabilities. I haven't talked about any of this, but, you know, that's what goes on there. And so a numerical weather prediction mesosphere, lower thermosphere, can't simply be lifting the lid and propagating upward what was found in the stratosphere, because there's a whole lot of stuff that, that gets generated in the mesosphere, or metamorphoses in the atmosphere. So satellite data can be very useful, but attention must be paid to the local time sampling patterns, which generally require longer sampling intervals or multiple satellites. I believe that we've shown that combining data from different satellites, it can be very useful. And I simply want to say that one of the remaining challenges here, I think, is to try to understand the differences between the EOS and the SABR data, and figure out how to deal with them, even if it's just basically by defining a covariance matrix and weighting them accordingly. Thank you.